This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you and welcome. Thanks for being here. I'm going to give you a little warning. I'm feeling irascible tonight. Now, really, try flying around with a broom up your jacksie and you might feel a little bit out of sorts as well. But high-flying rump discomfort aside, tonight I'm joined on the sofa by two good friends with opposing personalities. On one cushion, the 2009 Open champion Stuart Sink is as genial and thoughtful a sportsman as you'll ever meet. And on the other, the not-quite-right Paul Goidis, a pugnacious pro who's been teeing it up with grit and guile for 19 years.
We met in Orlando near the site of the annual Arnold Palmer Invitational. The API is a big event, and this is a big stage.
Paul, Stuart, welcome to stage 19 of the Backlot here at Universal Studios. It's 16,500 square feet, but I doubt if it's big enough for this conversation.
There you go.
You know, I'm sure there have been some amazing moments filmed right here on this soundstage. I shouldn't let the moment pass without asking you what your favorite movie is.
Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
that's a good one. Stewie, what about you?
I'm almost embarrassed to say because I'm kind of a chick flick guy.
Yeah?
So, Love Actually is my top.
Wow.
Yeah, that's why I said I was embarrassed.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing I don't really like to share out in the open too much.
I can go even more embarrassing. Mine is the original Jungle Book, 1968.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've both been involved in some big-time moments on the golf course. Obviously, Paul, back in 1996, you won the Arnold Palmer Invitational here. You shot 275 to beat Jeff Maggart by a shot. What do you remember about that week?
You know, it was a crazy, you know, like my best finish coming into that in my career. I think 3 years had been seventh. I think Johnny Miller actually mentioned that my resume doesn't look like a Bay Hill champion. Hey, if Johnny Miller's criticizing, you're doing something right, you know, that's the way it works. But I played unbelievably well. And then you get done and you know, Arnold Palmer standing there. It's one of those memories that just probably the best memory of my career.
Yeah, and Arnold was loved by so many. Stuart, you must have an Arnold story or two.
My first Arnold Palmer Invitational, my management company set up a practice round with me and the King. We teed off on 10 and never played here. My caddy and I looked at the yardage book. We kind of figured that, oh, it looks like a 3-wood. Pulled my 3-wood out of my bag and pretty soon I got Mr. Palmer's face like this far from mine. Actually, it's about this far from mine because I'm about that much taller than him. And he says, what's that? And I'm like, this looks like a 3-wood. He goes, it's a driver hole, son. I don't think I've ever hit another 3-wood on that tee. That was in 1997.
I guess it would be a driver. Yes. You know, my most personal Arnold story would be I played a skins game with Joey Sindelar and Arnold in Rochester, New York, a charity skins game. It was only 9 holes. Arnold won all 9 holes and then flew over us in his airplane. I think he emptied the toilet. Yeah.
In 2009, on the fabled links at Turnberry, Stuart Sink seized golf immortality and became the champion golfer of the year, following an emotional duel with one of my sentimental favorites.
You were in a playoff with the greatest links player of all time.
Yeah.
Safe to say that, and Tom Watson. And there's a tremendous groundswell of support for him. And what did it feel like to be up against that?
Well, actually, being up against Tom helped me in a couple ways. That week, first of all, as the week drew closer to the finish, I was distracted by being a sports fan and wondering what the heck Tom Watson was doing. You know,
like everybody else.
Every scoreboard I passed, I was looking up and thinking, "Hey, well, I wonder what Tom's doing." You know, and literally, it didn't occur to me until about the 13th hole that I was right in the mix and I needed to kind of get on my own horse and start playing golf. But I was distracted to the point where I never got really nervous. It was a real blessing for me.
You never got nervous?
Mm-mm.
Wow.
I never felt nervous at all.
Nervous.
Yeah, I'm nervous right now.
So am I.
Honestly, though, I really wasn't too nervous at all. When I got to the 72nd hole, I had about a 12, 15 footer, whatever it was. And I was just really relaxed. And as soon as I hit the ball, there was nowhere else it was going besides dead center.
What was your plan for the playoff?
My only plan was that I wanted to make sure I got to the tee second. Because I didn't want to be on the tee when Tom walked up and hear the roar. So we get into the carts. I tell the lady who's driving me, we're going to stay to the right, and we're going to go over to the Port-a-John in front of the tee. She sensed urgency. So we headed towards the Port-a-John. And we get about, just before the fifth fairway, and we're going across the mounds, and there's a rope coming. I jump out of the cart into weeds up to things where high weeds grow up to. She hits the rope with the steering column. The poles come flying out. She slams on the brakes. There's dust everywhere. And she's grabbed on the steering wheel like... So I just told her I would just walk the rest of the way.
Yes, I don't know how far Sink is away and whether this is a little bit of an old delaying tactic. I don't know where his buggy is. I don't know what he's up to. And he's keeping the old boy waiting. It's just a little move. I don't know.
You know, waiting in a porta potty is something that's not usually advisable.
Yeah, it didn't cross my mind in the playoffs I've been into.
Yeah.
The stand in the porta john.
Yeah.
But I also didn't win.
Okay. Where does your sense of humor come from?
It's just something I do naturally. I was that kid who always got, you know, I was always say something dumb and fourth grade teacher would say something, I'd blurt out a stupid answer. I was always that guy for whatever reason.
Did you make fun of yourself in school so that other people wouldn't have the opportunity to?
Yeah, get to them first. Yeah. There might be some of that. There might be some subconscious issues there. But I think the biggest thing, my mom grew up and one of the things I always remember from was don't rest on your laurels.
Well, the Players is about as big as it gets outside of a major. Right. And you were in a playoff with Sergio.
Right.
How was that pressure?
I was trying not to wet my pants.
Right.
Just be honest here.
You're trying not to wet his pants.
Right. Well, and I ended up wetting my golf ball instead. But right. I had about a 10 or 12, 15 footer to win the tournament on the last hole. Really hard day. I mean, Sergio shot, I think he shot 200 par the last day, and it was blowing 25 miles an hour. I mean, they would have closed the airport. You know, it was a really, really windy day. And I'm stunned that 500 didn't win the tournament. From the time I missed that putt to the time I hit it in the water in the playoff, I don't remember one second of that. It was just a blink of an eye. And I think that's part of what makes the great players great is that they have the ability to slow themselves down in the most pressure-packed situations. I think for me, it sped up to like, I was like the Flash, you know, for that time.
You were like the Flash all right that way. You didn't unbutton the top button of your shirt, and it was 100 degrees.
It was hot, yes. Well, I used to wear those mock turtlenecks, and then those went out of style. I think I drove them out of style.
I know that you're one of the most popular guys on tour. You were on the regular tour, and I'm sure, you know, on the Champions as well. Stuart, what is it that makes him popular?
Yeah, I'd like to know, too.
He has a couple of things that I love about Paul Goidos. Are obviously this sense of humor, and when he said people were expecting answer A, and he gives answer 14. His list-making abilities are, you know, not his highest strength.
Yeah.
A to 14, right? Yes. I don't even know how to get from A to 14. But his humor and his ability to notice, like, the nuances of different situations are really disarming to people. And I think it's really key for Paul that a lot of people are drawn to that because they feel comfortable around him. He makes people feel a lot like them.
He makes them feel normal.
He makes them feel normal, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, Paul, what's your take on Stewie?
He's a hardworking family guy. When I think of Stewart, I think of family. You know, he's been married more than half of your life.
Yeah, a lot more. 25
this year. Mm. You know, and I think he's a great barbecuer.
You are something of a meatmeister in the barbecue pit. Competitive?
There's a difference between entering competitions and being competitive.
Okay, fair enough.
My coach, Mike Lipnick, and I, and Chad Parker from Eastlake, the three of us have a competitive barbecue team called Q School. We compete a couple times a year. And
are you a better golfer or a barbecuer?
I'm a 74 barbecuer.
I mean, so you're like a
6 handicap.
That's not 74. What a sandbagger then. Yeah. That's like a 2 handicap.
2 handicap.
I never understood about barbecue and why it is a summer thing. You're already, you know, in 95 degrees. Now you want to stand over a fire flipping burgers. Why wouldn't you do it in the winter?
Hey, I didn't make the calendar.
Yeah. Well, there's nothing like watching a confident man manhandle his meat. Okay, now I'm going to ask you some true or false questions about each other. It was revealed last week in the Tampa Bay Times that Stewart Cink is allergic to grass, particularly Bermuda.
Did it make his hair fall out?
Well, it's done nicely if
false.
It has.
Yeah. False.
That is true. Stewart, to date, Paul is only one of 5 players to shoot 59 in PGA Tour competition.
True. No, false.
Yeah, very false. Good. Yeah, there's 6.
No more people have walked on the moon, shot 59.
Paul Stewart's participation in SIP and Swine honors the brutish behavior of society's deplorables.
Without a doubt, true.
That's false. Paul, Stewart drilled a 94-foot putt at a 2016 Duke Georgia Tech basketball game.
True.
It is true.
The kid that putted before me shanked it over into the visitor's bench.
The little bastard.
Then I went after it and made it.
He choked. It's Johnny Miller would have been merciless.
Merciless.
Stewart's middle name, most appropriately, is Hellraiser. Yeah, well, I wouldn't have thought so myself either. Yeah. Paul once said of his game, "I'm too inconsistent to be bad all the time."
That's got to be true.
Yes, it
is. I stole that from somebody else.
Stewart, Paul has been known to sign autographs with the inscription, "The worst player in the history of the PGA Tour."
False. Yeah, couldn't spell all that.
He wouldn't spend the time.
Yeah. Everyone knows it's McCord anyway, so just forget about it. Yeah. Really? Well, in 2010, you had a great moment at the John Deere Classic. You became the fourth PGA Tour pro to break 60. What do you remember specifically about that, Ryan?
Well, I was playing with Cliff Kresge and Jonathan Bird, and the one moment that really stands out, obviously there was, I only shot 4-under on the front, but I birdied 10, 11, and 12. And 11 was a 50-footer, and 12 was a 25-footer that broke 8 feet. And it was like, no. The 13th hole, the pin's kind of tucked, and I tugged my wedge, and I got a 25-footer. And I'm looking at it, and okay, and you know, you're kind of in the zone. I see everything. And I get over this putt, and I hit it. And this thing goes right dead in the center for birdie, and they both miss. And then I birdie the next hole. And 17th hole, I had about a 12-footer for birdie, and Cliff Kresge had a 12-foot, 1-inch putt for birdie on the exact same line. I had to move my coin. And I'm looking at it, and it's a little outside left, it's gonna break right. And Cliff hits a putt, and I could kind of tell where he hit it, and didn't break a bit. It just kind of, I think it missed high. I thought, well, it didn't break very much. And so I played less break and made it. You know, if Cliff Kresge hits this ball 11 feet from the hole, I don't shoot 59.
Yeah.
And then 18, I couldn't have played a better hole. I was playing so good and things were going so well. It's funny what makes you nervous, but that really didn't for whatever reason. I mean, I was nervous, but not, you know, dying nervous.
We've got some rule changes coming up in the game. We're going from 34 to 24 rules, which I think is a huge improvement. Specific changes on the following. The ball drop. This is the one I don't get. You have to drop the ball from at least an inch.
Well, we used to do it like this. So it is an improvement.
Yeah.
You ever watch those guys on TV and they're trying not to hit themselves with it?
I played in a pro-am in a place called Ardglass with the guy. Weather was so bad. They looked like my partners looked like the crew of the Deadliest Catch, you know, wearing seal skins, and one guy had a parka on, you know, with a fur hood, and the weather sort of died down a little bit. He'd hit it dead left into the harbor, and he dropped a ball into the hood of his parka.
Exactly. Took a lost ball.
We allowed him to look for it for about 3 minutes. Okay, so we're dropping the ball from at least an inch. The time for ball search has gone from 5 to 3 minutes. Repairing spike marks is now allowed, leaving the flag stick in the hole.
Apparently.
You can do that on the green. You can watch and listen to video or music as long as it doesn't provide an advantage. I love that one.
It sounds subjective to me.
If I listened to Rachmaninoff 2, whatever, I guarantee you I'd play Lights Out.
Yeah.
Because it's just inspiring. No equipment changes yet. So what do you think of those?
As far as the lost ball, there's also a thing they're adding where you're going to be able to, not at our level, but the club player is going to be able to, instead of going back to the tee, they're going to be able to take the ball and drop under 2 strokes, like on the edge of the fairway.
Right.
Like a local rule they can adopt.
Yeah,
I think it's a good thing overall.
Yeah, simplifying the rules is a good deal. And obviously, they're talking about the ball, too. And I just was thinking about this earlier. Let's take Justin Thomas. Justin Thomas is a great player, and if we decided tomorrow to change everything in the game, after a couple of years of figuring it out, Justin Thomas is still going to be a great player. We're undervaluing the talent of the people playing the game by saying the equipment.
I think to add to that, too, another thing we forget about is the ball's been going the same distance now since about 2002.
Yeah.
Something like that. Generally. And players have started to use statistics and shot link and all that to gain an advantage by decision making, because players are hitting driver more often. We used to hit irons on holes.
Yeah.
No one hits an iron and lays up on it anymore. They just send it.
Right.
Send it is like the theme of today's golf on the PGA Tour.
Are there other rules that you would consider changing?
I don't really like the signing the scorecard thing. Signing the scorecard used to be because nobody knew what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, this guy had to test, yes, he shot that score. Mm. Now it's on television, there's walking scores, there's a million people out there.
72nd hole, the guy that's making a putt for a playoff should go from the picking the ball out of the hole right to the tee. Instead, we have a lot of people talking about it, we have commercial breaks, and we lose viewers.
And I tell you what, you're also, you shoot a good score, you're nervous in the scoring tent. there's a paranoia there.
Yeah.
That doesn't need to be there.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to describe our game to someone from another planet, how would you do it?
The best description of golf probably is a something that slowly turns you insane.
Right.
Yeah, it's a battle against your own mind.
I co-designed a golf course in Turkey down on the southern coast, and I was taking my clubs down there, you know, to play an exhibition match to open the golf course, and I was stopped by this Turkish border guard, you know, with the mirrored sunglasses, you know, and the Uzi, you know, the whole lot. And he says, "What is this?" And I said, "It's golf clubs." He says, "What is this?" He doesn't know what golf is. And I said, "Fine, okay." So I had to open the bag, take a driver out, and a tee and a ball. I said, "You put the ball on this, you put it kind of in the ground, you hit it with one of these, then you hit it with one of these, then you get it onto like some really short grass with a hole in it, and you try to hit it into the hole with one of these." And he looks at me and he says, "Why?" And
it's
I have
true.
Never been able to answer that question.
There is no answer to that.
Well, this is rapid fire, the most revealing segment of the show when we find out what really makes you tick. You know, so somebody start a clock. The dream car of your youth?
BMW.
Mustang GT.
Your dream car now?
Aston Martin.
Toyota Tundra.
Really?
I've had one for 9 years, and it's my favorite car.
It is?
A DB9.
Yeah, I love my pickup, yeah. Favorite PGA Tour event?
Honda Classic.
Yeah.
I love coming back to the East Coast, no offense, to the Long Beach dirt bags.
Dirt bags.
Your favorite vacation spot?
Glacier National Park, Montana.
Oh, that was quick.
I don't take vacations.
Favorite foursome?
Pamela Anderson.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
And Kevin Sutherland. Why I pick Kevin, I make sure they play the back nine.
What song do you sing out loud in the shower?
I don't.
Thank you for that.
I sing loud in the shower.
Do you?
Yeah, lots of different songs. I love singing in the shower.
All right.
Don't have a favorite, though.
What's your most ingrained superstition?
I have two coins in my pocket, always with the birth years of my girls.
I always thought superstitions were very bad luck, so I stay away from those.
Cupcakes or quiche?
Cupcakes, are you kidding me? That's not even a choice.
I like quiche. I'm also embarrassed to admit that. I like to have a quiche when I watch Love Actually.
I've never had a key.
From any era in the game, the player most respected with a 54-hole lead?
Tiger Woods.
Tiger Woods.
Lucky guess. The player most likely to choke with a 54-hole lead?
Me.
And that's Rapid Fire with Stuart Sink and Paul Goitis. You got nothing and like it. Your two careers intersected at the 2010 Ryder Cup in Wales. Celtic Manor is kind of a bleak place to be if the weather isn't great.
Corey came to me and said, "I'd like you to be one of my assistants." Who? Me? I said, you know, the closest I've ever been to the Ryder Cup is when I get up and turn the volume up. That's it. That's my Ryder Cup experience, is listening, watching it on TV. What are you doing?
Stuart, why do you think Corey picked him?
Yeah, I'd like to know.
I think he's so relaxing.
Yeah.
That everyone needs to be relaxed because it's a tense environment.
Can be.
Behind closed doors, it's not so much. But once you get on the golf course, it's pretty tense.
And it's unbelievable.
Anytime you see Paul walk up, you just automatically start kind of chuckling because you know something's coming.
Exactly.
You laugh in advance.
Exactly.
Well, you know, we were talking about Matt Kuchar there. He can pull some moves on the golf course, too. What did he do?
So I was just watching, and Stuart was... Was it alternate shot?
I think it was alternate shot.
Alternate shot the first day.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 17th hole. Go ahead.
I believe it was against Rory and GMAC.
It could have been, yeah.
And first round, it was a tight match, and I had about a 30-footer. I remember making it.
Right.
And kind of turned around to Matt to give him like a high five, you know, team spirit.
Right.
And I see him with his hands above his head like this, and he's got his hands in a diamond shape, and he goes, I don't know what he said, but boom! And he did what's called the diamond cutter.
From wrestling.
Yeah, it was that.
I'm just happy it wasn't the flying squirrel. Stuart, this was your fourth appearance in a Ryder Cup, having been on a winning team with Paul Azinger. How much of a difference did that make to you?
It didn't really make that much because we lost again.
Yeah.
But being on the winning team of the Ryder Cup was just unbelievable because when I've had wins on my own, you know, it's like you win and there's applause and you get a trophy and then it's kind of like, okay, what's next? You know, and it's a, you think you're going to like live forever on the high of victory and you don't. It goes away fast. But with the Ryder Cup, being part of a team, it lasted longer.
Yeah.
And so you got to experience that with your team, your caddies, the other wives and girlfriends and the captains for a lot longer. And it, and you know, still, I mean, being part of a winning team is, it's still a really special moment.
What was it like for you stepping into the vice captain role, you know, not having played before, you know, you're part of the visiting team and you know, the Europeans were loaded. That was an incredibly strong team.
I always thought the Ryder Cup, I didn't get it, in a sense. You know, they talked about how it was so much, you know, you don't play in it, you have no idea the tension that's there. What I took from it, and then it got down to where it was the last hole, was 17. Hunter Mahan needed to win the last two holes, and the Ryder Cup would have been a tie. And I got down there while they're standing on the tee, and that's the most pressure I'd ever felt in my entire, the most tension in the, it was unbelievable. I stood there going, how does anybody play golf? I could never play golf under this kind of pressure.
Sure,
it was
you
like,
could.
It was weighty, and it's like you were, it was hard to stand up straight. It was just this, the tension in the air was nothing I'd ever, I'm not even playing in the event. And the tension was unbelievable.
When you've got 11 other guys, you know, that you're playing for, you'd find a way to do it.
I was stunned by how good the play is in the Ryder Cup.
Stuart, if you had to pick one memory from your Ryder Cups, what would it be?
My own memory probably on the golf course was probably when I played Sergio in the singles in 2006 in Ireland. Mm-hmm. That was probably my favorite memory because I remember making about 10,000 miles of putts. Sergio was a target on their team. He was a big man that you wanted to take down.
Oh, absolutely.
And our team was getting thrashed. And we had basically no prayer of winning except for everybody at the front end to do their job and win and to go out there and get a big lead and make tons of putts and just go bananas. We were dormy, 15th hole, and Sergio needed to extend the match and he chipped in. Chipped in. And I had about a 25-footer and I made it to end the match. And that was probably the favorite moment of my career when that putt went in.
Only in the Ryder Cup.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
Why is Farmer supporting my show? Well, I've interviewed over 100 guests, ranging from legendary golfers to presidents to celebrities. And just like Farmers is smarter from their unbelievable but true experiences, from each of my interviews, I've gained great knowledge that I can carry forward. Well, from most of them. Anyway, thank you, Farmers, for supporting my show.
We are Farmers. Bum, ba-dum, bum, 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 bum.
All right, then. Now back to the show.
Well, Paul, I heard early in your career you were hitting balls on the range in Hawaii.
In my first event, you know, you go over to Hawaii and it's, you know, it's a, the weather's wonderful and I'm on the range hitting balls and there's a guy hitting next to me and it's this big, tall, blonde guy. And he's got a lady on the bag and it's a carry bag. And he's wearing, you know, just dressed like me. Well, better than me, but like same pants and whatnot. And he's just hitting the ball, and the wind's blowing there, and it's, he's hitting these bullets down there. And I'm, you know, it's making a different noise, and I'm hitting it, it's going, he's hitting his noise. I'm going, and look, who is this guy? I haven't even seen this guy. I've walked back and say, this guy's hitting it unbelievable. I have no idea who this person is. And I watch golf on TV, I have no idea who this person is. I'm going, wow, I mean, this is unbelievable. It's kind of like, wow, where have I gotten myself? These are nobody here. It's hitting it better than I could ever dream of hitting. So I kind of go get a drink of water, and I kind of see somebody, and I go, who's that guy next to me in balls? And he kind of looks at me like, what? I go, that's the tall blonde guy next to me hitting balls. He goes, that's Payne Stewart. He's not wearing knickers. How would I know that? It was like one of those situations where, whew, thank God it was Payne Stewart, man. If it was anybody else, I was done.
Stewart, he touched your career early on as well, didn't he?
I'd gotten a few starts out on the in the summer part of the tour right after I graduated from college. And one of them was Kingsmill. And I got paired with Payne, and he kind of scraped it that day. Wasn't that impressive. And I remember thinking back to the round, like, if you can hit it like that and still shoot what he shot, I think he shot like 5 under. I mean, he got it around. He just, he was efficient, and he showed me a lot.
I played him on the Sunday of the 91 Ryder Cup, and probably the best round of golf I ever played. I was four up with four to play, and then I lost two holes and went into a full code brown, DEFCON 3. And they'd lost the control of the crowd between 16th green and the 17th tee. There were just people everywhere. And I'm trying to make my way to 17 through this crowd, and this lady marshal jumps in front of me and pokes me in the chest with her quiet please sign. Says, where do you think you're going? Like I'm a heavily disguised spectator. So I'm about to go bat crazy. This lady, you know, and when I feel this arm come around my shoulder, and Payne put his face right on mine, like with that stupid choir boy grin, you know, and I could smell the red man, the plug that he had in. He said, ma'am, I'd love you to keep this asshole here, but he's playing against me. And he just swept me up onto the 17th tee.
Really, one of the best things I got out of the Payne Stewart Award last year was that it got me to really kind of investigate more about Payne and learn about a little bit more about him, a little bit more about the way he's so giving, about his good nature, like the story you were telling about the Ryder Cup.
Yeah.
You know, he just had a really good, like, he was a guy's guy, but he was a sweetheart of a guy,
too. A good soul. What's something I could do to live up to the Payne Stewart Award or qualify for it?
I wouldn't know. You ask him.
You know, you came into the game just before Tiger. What was your initial reaction to him in those early years?
The first time I ever played with him, I was at a junior tournament in Texas, and no one ever heard of him. I mean, we didn't know who he was. He was 13 or 14, and on the final day, the final group was Tiger, myself, and Nota Begay.
Yeah.
In the final group, and Tiger won, just destroyed us both. And the next time I played with him, he had gone from 14 years old to his freshman year in college, and I'll never forget the sound that his shot on the first tee made. It was like a cannon, like the loudest, most solid, powerful impact of a ball I've ever heard. He went on to play really well that day too, shot like 600 in college. You know, back in those days, mm-hmm. No one was shooting that.
Paul, what do you remember?
He grew up in the town next to me. We kind of played the same golf course for a while. I ran into him a little bit on the range. I remember seeing this kid. I didn't know who he was. It was just this little kid hitting balls. He was five and hitting it better than me. And then all of a sudden he wins the three amateurs in a row and comes out in a hello world moment. And then he just, you know, what he's doing a little bit right now, he just kind of went, you know, made the cut and didn't play well, played better, and he finally won a tournament. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was at Disney. It was back when you played, you know, three different courses, and I got paired behind. I was behind Tiger Woods for all 3 days. I knew it was different. We played when you play the Palm course, you have about a 200-yard walk to the locker room, and he was in the group in front of me, and I got to the locker room before him, and his shirt was covered in Sharpies.
Yeah.
People are trying to get his autograph. He's covered in this stuff. I'm thinking, how do you deal with this? I mean, how do you play? I mean, golf's hard enough. How's he? And then the next day, we're playing Lake Buena Vista, and he shoots 8 under on the front nine, and he's fist pumping and running around the green like a madman. And I'm just standing there going, I'm like 2 over. This guy, what is this guy doing? And what is going? And he wins the tournament. And I'm going, what is this? And that's when Feinstein asked me who, you know, so they had the best player never to win a major. It was Tiger Woods at that point. This is 1997 or 6 when he first came out, and he won the Masters. Didn't last very long. And it didn't last long.
Can he win another major?
We have completely forgotten how good Tiger Woods is.
Yeah.
This is, I, and myself included. But he, to me, looks healthy. If he's healthy, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm the same as Paul. I mean, like a lot of people, I think he'd pretty much decided that it looked like he's never going to come back.
Hey, there's a lot of great young players. You know, Dustin's a little older. You got Spieth and Thomas and Rory and Rahm, and then there's a million of them I can name.
Yeah, but they've never
seen Tiger Woods. They're not Tiger Woods.
No.
Altogether.
Yeah.
They have not seen this.
Yeah.
They don't know what's coming.
It's a pretty amazing time in the game with Tiger. Yeah. You know, the game is so much better with him in it.
Yeah. And it's going to be great to see Tiger. Hopefully he can stay healthy and keep playing well and get some wins and see him mix in with those young players and see how everybody interacts up at the top of the leaderboard on majors and, you know, big tournaments on the PGA Tour.
Golf's a funny game. Tell me a funny story about it.
Sometimes golf isn't so funny to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Stewie?
There's so many moments. One of my favorites is with Seve and Tony Johnstone. I know you've
heard. Yeah.
Tony had hit his ball to the right a little bit, and Seve hit his ball a little to the right. And Tony was trying to get relief from something by a tree. And he said, Seve, come take a look at this. Do you think I get relief? You know, and Savvy says, no, 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 no. And then, so he widened his stance. So what if I hit it that way? Anyway, he's doing everything possible to get relief. Savvy says, no, just shut him down. And Tony finally just says, that's okay, that's your ball. We don't really have that kind of, like, banter in golf anymore, like some of the old stories.
Yeah.
And there's just so many of them that are just classics.
Paul, you paid $40 for six lessons?
I did. The first time I ever took lessons, it was a series of six lessons, $40. A guy named Jim Hunter. And right there at Recreation Park Golf Course. I still play there three or four times a year with a group of guys. I worked as a starter there for a couple of summers. And what, you know, we'd have a game. So I would work the 6 a.m. to 12:30 shift. And I would take all the tee times between, say, 12:30 and 1 and send them out early. And I had the golf course to myself.
Were you bribable?
This is a golf course that got 120,000 rounds a year. You can't bribe your way onto this golf. The mayor showed up late. If you didn't check in like 10 minutes for your tee time, it's gone. Mayor checks in, shows up 5 minutes. I gave your tee time away, pal. You're out.
Could you bribe your way off the golf?
And then another time I was working on a Saturday morning pact. You couldn't. If you didn't have tee time, you couldn't play. Guy walked in, slid a $5 bill inside the window. I looked at it and looked at him. But went around, took a piece of tape and taped it to the glass and lit it on fire.
You did.
Yeah, it's not getting you anywhere, pal. I was 18, what do I know?
Yeah. Paul, you've never been afraid to mix it up in politics. Who's your political hero?
Wow, that's a tough question. I think you gotta go back a little bit. George H.W. Bush. Mm-hmm. I got a chance to meet him a couple times. Here's a guy that served in the military, served in the CIA, was president of the United States at a tough time. Following Ronald Reagan, it's going to be a tough presidency.
Sweet.
Such
man.
A beloved man.
Stuart, you were born in 73 in Alabama. Who are your heroes?
Well, Condoleezza Rice would be my pick.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we share the Alabama connection. She's from Birmingham, Alabama. Uh-huh. You know, when I see her playing at Pebble or when I see her shaking hands at Augusta wearing a green jacket, I'm really proud of not only what she's been able to do in politics and in the public eye, but also coming from her background to rise to the kind of heights she has.
But again, that's the stateswoman. She's a person who's looking out for the best interests of others.
Yes, yeah.
Always, and that's impressive.
What do you do in terms of charity?
You know, I...
I accept a lot of it.
You know, mine's more... For like soft goods, I try to help people out, help out events, donate things. I do a lot for my school. My dad worked there. It was a big part of my life at Long Beach State. But mine's more soft related, helping other people raise money through whatever I can do.
Stuart, you have a foundation?
Yeah, we have a foundation. We run a golf tournament and raise money through it a couple other ways. But because of where Lisa and I came from, we found out Connor was coming when we were 19 years old. In college.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
We were already planning on getting married at some point, but just not quite that soon.
I'm sorry, I've got to ask, what was that moment like?
It was kind of like this.
When you found it, was it like, I'm sorry, you're what?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I remember the phone call, like, it was yesterday. And I remember the linoleum floor and the cord on the phone, you know? But, you know, that was a turning point in our life, to say the very least. But because of that, we went and met with a counselor, and we were going over all the options. You know, we had a lot of options, and some of them weren't pretty. Mm. And sitting down with this counselor, she gave us the peace and the confidence to go ahead and say, we're gonna give this a go. We're in college, we're gonna get married, we're gonna have our first baby when we're 20 years old. And so we turned.
What could possibly go wrong?
What could possibly go wrong? And so because of that, now our foundation, that when we raise our money for charity, half of it goes to the Crisis Pregnancy Center. And the other half we give to the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit at our county medical center.
Well, you're too good, man. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
At Universal.
Thank you, David.
This afternoon.
That was awesome.
Thanks, guys. Stuart and Paul have lived lives charmed with goodness and gratitude. Stuart, from America's South, is steeped in a traditional worldview and has been immortalized by his victory in golf's oldest major. Paul, golf's Mr. No Shoulders, was reared on America's bustling, freewheeling left coast, and his career is the product of a never-say-die creative spirit that keeps him playing the game he loves. It's fitting that they're great friends to each other, and despite their better judgment, friends of mine. That's a lucky spell for me. Well, that's it for tonight, folks. Until we meet again, follow my antics on Facebook, Instagram, and Fehertwit.
and wherever elderly men meet online. Good night, sweetie. Thanks for joining me, Fegarty fans. You can find more of the Fegarty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Fegarty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Fegarty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.